I was thinking about my opening line for today, and I thought the line should be, it's the thought that counts. After all, Krishna also is so merciful that he counts the thoughts, right? So I'm praying that the Vaishnavas also will count their good intentions. Many things didn't materialize because... Whereas all of you did your homework, I didn't do mine. Good. Excellent. So I wasn't able to process all your nice work. I had lots of plans and, you know, do some statistics, percentages, see how many devotees joined actually from the books, from the Harinam party, or from the halva, or whatever. But, so whatever you've done in terms of filling out forms or writing prayers, you remember that in the first session, it was already mentioned, that, the person who is praying gets the benefits, right? So you got the benefits anyway of the exercise. And the idea of it was obviously to kind of create a little more awareness that we should pray, and that we should the little form not so expertly made, but the idea of it was to kind of make us more aware of how we are getting so much mercy. So many times we have this mood of, when am I get the mercy, give me the mercy, give me the mercy, while we are surrounded by mercy. We live in mercy. It's there on all sides, right? So much mercy that... So I try to bring it out a little bit in a questionnaire. For today, I would have liked to do something which I also didn't do. That's why I say the motto of the day is the thought. It's the thought that counts. I would have liked to make a slideshow. A slideshow of mercy at home, and I was getting all creative. I was... taking pictures of different home altars, right? And I was taking pictures of bookshelves. I even thought of, like, get a picture of a sannyasi with his little suitcase with a computer on top, a Dhamma Next, you know, mercy at home. And like that, it was getting quite creative. I thought of taking a picture of the Brahmachari ashram, you know, just to get an idea of what it's like, the bunk beds, the socks, and all the things all over the place. Right? I thought that I might even win the world press photo with a picture like that. In other words, it could have been a juicy one, and I guess I owe it to you sometime. This time. Again, it's the thought that counts. You know, it's the best I can do. Sorry for that. I had a sort of an idea with this seminar to get into various aspects, such as the first day. I wanted to get into the mood of our dependence on the Lord, and how without mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, we really can't do anything, therefore the mood of prayer. The second day, I wanted to make us see how mercy is available really everywhere, and how the whole arrangements are arrangements of mercy. How Krishna even comes into this world with the living being as the super soul, always is with him. How Krishna is always reminding us, is always again trying to bring us back to Him. Some people say, yeah, but why did He have to arrange suffering? Why couldn't He just let us be? You know, if we want to be without, if we want to be, exist without God, why couldn't He just let us be in this world? Right? And just, well, let us experience for ourselves then that it doesn't work. Why to add some suffering? Right? I mean, it's like it's one thing trying to get satisfaction and not being able to get it. That's one level of suffering. But then there is absolute hell in the world, right? So many living entities suffering in horrible ways, in so much pain, right? So why did He have to make it even worse, right? And had all that pain, right? Well, again, see how He is also here merciful. I have in this regard childhood stories. I don't know what it is. I must be getting senile because this year and I have so many childhood memories. You know, like the whole year I have childhood memories. So this one, it's not the first time that I'm telling it, but basically when we were kids we had a maid, and this maid was very heavy, and she used to always catch your ear in a real nasty way, like nasty, like not between her two hands but between two fingers like that. You know, she had it between two fingers and then squeezed really hard, like very hard, and then twist, right? And like, you know, I thought it was so mean, right? So nasty that one day she let me go and I just turned around and I stood very cool. I was very cool and very serious, and I said, "You just wait till I grow up." I was ready to wait, you know, and grow up for her, right? whatever it would take, you know. I was gonna grow up, and then you see, you know. And she was a little intimidated because it was dead serious, right? But when I grew up, I lost it. I still think she's mean, but now I can also see that I was wild, which I really didn't see then, and that I was doing extremely dangerous things. Like, I had all kinds of games. One game was taking a ball and throwing it on the roof and then climbing up by the rain pipe and then go get the ball and climb back down and do it again. And you do this for like quite a while. So, you know, I thought it was far out, and I guess they also thought it was far out. So, like that, now I can appreciate that maybe some interference was required, and at that time, I really didn't think any interference was needed at all. I thought that I knew exactly what I was doing, as I still do. This is the funny thing. Just as I was being checked by the maid, in a painful way, but it did work, it did check me. In the same way, Krishna sometimes really blocks us, right? A broken leg or some other variety, can really slow us down, can really, stop us from just running around in some sort of euphoria in this world trying to enjoy the material energy and thinking that it's working, etc. So it's Krishna's mercy that He wants to shorten our stay here in the material world. Right? Now you may say, yeah, but like, I mean, I don't appreciate it. I mean, I really feel that He shouldn't do that, you know. He should just leave me alone. If I want to be left alone, why doesn't He leave me alone? That you can have also. That you can have in the Brahma Jyoti. There we can be left alone as long as we like. Right? We can stay there, and there is no interference whatsoever. Just stay there, and there's no suffering, in the sense that no added suffering, nothing. Right? No suffocation. One can just stay there in the Brahma Jyoti until one is fed up with it. Right? But here is another realm. So there are different realms. That's all. And even in an existence separation from Krishna, right? Different realms. But here's the one where the mercy of Krishna also comes in that way. Now, we are not looking for that. Right? We're not looking for that. And we're seeing that there are three modes of material nature. And that a person who lives in passion and ignorance is going to encounter a lot of suffering, and that one who is in the mode of goodness is going to encounter less suffering. And therefore, we are in favor of the mode of goodness. That's better. And then, tathenu kampam susamik samano. Then we have to tolerate whatever comes, right, and see it as this must be still required, right, although we are not aware how. But then again, if we get more honest, right, if we get more honest, then tathenu kampam becomes more realistic. If we get more honest, it becomes more realistic to appreciate that we have indeed reasons to still suffer while we're devotees. Because how many times are still so many impure thoughts coming up in our mind? How many impure desires are there? So then, when some rectification is happening to us, how can we complain? How can we say, well, I'm a devotee now, it shouldn't be so heavy, or even get mentally disturbed that Krishna is sending us suffering? No, it is we are still clearly deserving, right? We are still so contaminated. So therefore, tathenu kampam susamik samano, which means that one should just endure and tolerate all these difficulties that come, and take it as Krishna's mercy, and then one surely will get the direct mercy of Krishna. Then Krishna will. What is it anyway? The mercy of Krishna. Sometimes I was thinking about that, and it really means that that Krishna reveals himself. That is the mercy of Krishna, that Krishna begins to reveal himself. There's also in the Bhagavad Gita that Sanjaya is able to see Krishna directly on the battle of Kurukshetra, and all this is due to the mercy of his spiritual master. And he has served his spiritual master nicely, and the result is that now he is able to see Krishna directly, even at like a long distance by some mystic power. So this is the mercy of Krishna is actually the ability to perceive Krishna, right, somehow or other. That is the mercy we're after. Of course, Krishna's mercy may also be experienced indirect. Like we see, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just praying, Janmani, Janmani, Swale, Bhavatat, Bhakti, Rahaita, Kitvai. Birth after birth, let me stay in this material world. But Prabhupada also explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that although a devotee may pray like that, the Lord still takes the devotee back to Godhead, because in his heart of hearts, right, a devotee desires to be in the association of the Lord. So he's hankering for the Lord to reveal himself, actually, and to be with the Lord. That's his natural inclination, right? I mean, due to his love for the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, the mercy of the Lord is that the Lord is soft-hearted, that he becomes purchased by the love and devotion of the devotee, and therefore he cannot hide himself, he cannot hold back, and he has to give himself. Just like it is said, mukti dadati bhakti sma karihi chit, that liberation I will give you, but I will hide bhakti behind my back. I will not give it to you. I'll hide it from you. Because by bhakti, I become purchased, Krishna says. I become purchased. And so, therefore, that he doesn't give so easily. Therefore, some testing is there. So many times. Why all this testing? Why is he testing us again? God, how many times do we have to be tested? You know, and it's too much. We surrender and then again, another test. He's so heavy. Why is he so heavy, right? Because he becomes purchased, and not just once he's purchased, he really stays purchased also. See, this is the other thing about the Lord. It's not you purchase him today and he'll drop you tomorrow like a stone. We see that the Lord is also staying mercifully inclined towards the devotee. The Lord, like, even if sometimes we have devotees who are struggling and struggling and struggling in spiritual life, and then they decide they can't do it, and they just contemplating leaving. And then one day they do it. So there was one such devotee in Vrindavan in the years that I was there. And this devotee, he was quite tall, and not as tall as you, but almost as tall. And he was very tall, and he wanted to, he couldn't do it anymore. He wanted to leave the temple. So he decided to go, and he left, and he wanted to enjoy again. But he couldn't. He couldn't. Because wherever he went and wherever he was always remembering, Krishna. So there he was, you know, in the middle of a group of people, doing it again, you know, smoking certain things and all these things. And he was just, he knew, you know, that like, I shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, it's not everything there is, you know, this is not the ultimate thing in life, you know, it's just some material thing, but it's limited experiences, etc. It's not fully satisfying. So like that, he couldn't really fully enjoy. So he just got upset and he was angry with Krishna. He said, Krishna, it's not fair. It's not fair. You're not even letting me enjoy, you know. I want to enjoy. So, well, I guess, you know, if you just keep on praying to Krishna, then he will fulfill the desire, right? There's also a mention in the Upanishads that the Lord helps those who want to go to the spiritual world. He helps them, right, to make spiritual advancement. And those who want to go to hell, he also helps them to go to hell. So if you're really determined, then okay, go. Anyway, in this case, he was desiring so much to enjoy again. So one day he walked into a room, and this is in India, and in India all the rooms have these ceiling fans. Now I'm especially speaking to you, you know, just these ceiling fans are quite dangerous, you know, quite dangerous. Sometimes they hang low, you know, so it's always intelligent in India, as you're bowing down to go through the little doors, right, to next look up at the height of the fan, you know, because anyway, he forgot to do that particular day, and stuck his head right in the fan. Now, that, of course, was quite an experience, you can imagine. He circumambulated the entire universe, and so many other things happened there. But after that, it worked. He was able to again, after he recovered from that, of course, he was able to again enjoy, right? It worked again. So he was doing it again, enjoying with everyone else, and it was a great time. And he was traveling a bit throughout India, and on his travels he came in South India, and somehow or other, on this day, he happened to come to a holy river, and it happened to be the river Krishna. Right? So he's sitting there at the river Krishna, and as he's sitting there, he was just making a little something to, you know, one of these things they do. And he was about ready to get into it, and then there was a monkey that came out of the hills. This monkey went to the river Krishna, put his hands in the water, touched the water 3 times to the head, paid obeisances, and then went in the river, went with the head under three times, like, you know, like a brahmana does, you know, and went out of the water again. And he was like, oh my God, oh my God, this is a devotee. There's no doubt about it. A devotee. And he was thinking, this is my fate. Me too, right? I will also be a monkey, etc. So all along, Krishna never left him alone, right? Krishna just let him think a little bit. Yes, now I leave you alone. Okay, now I leave you alone. Now you do what you want. But all along he was just there, waiting for the occasion to again try and bring him back. Right? And this is how it is. It's not so easy to forget Krishna. We say, Oma Gyanati Mirandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Saksura Militam Yanatas Mai Sri Guruve Namaha. The spiritual master opens our darkened eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. And once opened, it's not so easy to close. Like, for example, just look into a light for a little while and then close your eyes. And you still see, like, the shape in front of your eyes, right? It's like it's not just possible to give it up so easily. So in the same way, once the eyes are opened, even if we try to forget Krishna, not very easy. Right? So here again we see the mercy of the Lord. Right? We see how for the Lord is so kind that once someone has turned to him, he doesn't just let him slide off into Maya. Even if the person is very determined to go back into Maya, no, the Lord will not just let it happen. It's not so easy. Right? That doesn't work like that. You can try. You can try like anything, and you will have a hard time. Right? I also tried sometimes. I mean, I tried, it was long ago, it was in the beginning. I tried, I was in the Sankirtan van, sitting in the back on boxes here, and I was a new bhakta, and it was minus 15, and there was a partition, and in the front, the brahmanas were sitting with 7-Up and cashew nuts, and I was with another bhakta on the cold boxes, looking through this little window, how they were sitting in a warm, heated compartment, having all that, while we were freezing, and I was envious like anything. I was turning green, and also bluish from the cold. Then we came to the spot, and the devotees had also stolen a cart from a supermarket, which was in the van, and this one devotee who was very passionate said, give the cart, you know. So I passed it on, and he just pulled it out of my hands, and my finger got caught in it, right? And at minus 15 hertz more, right? So I came out of the van, I was just blowing on my finger. And he goes like, what's happened to you? What happened to you? You know, I got my finger caught. He says, you're not the body. So, it was a little austere. It did help me to warm up. And then they sent me out with this other new bhakta. And this bhakta, he was a classical bhakta. He knew only three words, and they were Jai, Nectar, and Bliss. Yeah? And he's saying this all the time. So I was out with him while my finger were really hurt, and he was going like, Jai, Nectar, Bliss. So I said, shut up, okay? Shut up, okay? And he said, Babu, it's all nectar. I said, I told you to shut up, okay? And then he still went on, you know. So I thought I'd get him back. He didn't have gloves, you know, and it was minus 15. I said, do you know that it's minus 15 today, you know? You heard the weather forecast? Yes. It's freezing, huh? And you don't have gloves. You know what's going to happen to your hands, right? They're going to freeze. That's nectar and bliss for you, isn't it? And then he said, I'm not the body. I mean, that was it, you know. I thought, first a fanatic, and now a madman. So I was convinced, you know, that this is ridiculous. This is too much. I'm getting out of here. So I did. I got out of there. And I went on the train and this and that. Anyway, then I went a few days later, I went to the movies. And as I went to the movies, in the movies, suddenly in the middle of nowhere in the movies, there is this clip, there's some devotees coming in the scene. Hare Krishnas from nowhere. But the tilak was wrong. So I'm looking at it kind of indignant, you know, these are not devotees. What is this, you know? These guys are fake. Right? It was really clear. Right? So I'm looking like kind of like, what's going on here? And the next moment, these fake Hare Krishnas, right? They have their book bags flinging over their shoulders, and they go into a bar, and they sit down, and they order some pints of beer, and some girls are coming and sit on their laps, you know, and a voice comes said, "It's good having a beer after a hard day's work." And I thought, and I was so upset, right? But it worked for me. It worked for me because I tried to be in Maya, and there it was again. The devotees were there again, and I was really thinking, God, you know, look at that. You know, Krishna is everywhere. The one movie I go, right? It's got fake Hare Krishnas in. There's just no escape, right? So anyway, I could go on with like my own biography, and that's would be easy, but I don't want to do that. But Krishna doesn't just let us go, right? He's very kind. He is really concerned with every living being, and we cannot just let Krishna go. It says that a devotee is rasagraha. Rasagraha means one who has tasted the nectar of Krishna consciousness, and once tasted, it's not possible to just stop tasting. Right? So, well, many people have experienced how mercy came in their lives even before they joined, right, in different ways. In my case, also, on many occasions, and also Krishna really had his ways to make me devotee. I was some devotees, they joined very easily, like some devotees, they joined very, very early. Bhakti Bhushan Maharaj, I was sharing a room with him, and we were talking about this, and he just met Shivananda, and Shivananda had one little magazine where there's a picture of Prabhupada, and he just saw it, and that was it. That was enough for him, you know. He just joined, just like that. It's like a very special nature, really sensitive to the real thing. Right? And once he recognizes it, surrenders. Right? Very me, I'm the opposite, you know. I'm like, no, forget it. No, we're not going to do this. It looks like the truth. Oops, that looks like trouble. No, stay away from that, you know. So I could see a Hare Krishna. Oops, watch out for those guys. They're dangerous. See, before as a devotee, I read this book. It was a book about India called A Year with the Yogis, and in there was a thing about the three gunas. So I'd read about the three gunas, and that was like one of my trump cards, you know, that I used in different discussions with people. I mean, I would always pull it out again, you know. Do you know the three gunas? The three what? Gunas, you don't know. Oh, that's really interesting, those gunas, you know. And I give an explanation of the gunas. So one day I did it again, and there was this 13-year-old kid who was interested in spiritual things, and I was just flashing my gunas at him. And then he goes, "Oh, the three gunas, you mean the three modes of material nature?" I go, "Three modes of material nature, never heard of that translation." I just knew about the three gunas, right? "Yeah, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas." "Yes," he said, "Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, goodness, passion, ignorance." Again, a translation which I never heard, you know. I just knew Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. So, and then it became so practical when he explained it, whereas mine was more ethereal, you know, the three gunas, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, you know. Right?
So his explanation was clearly better than mine, and although I didn't let him know, I mean, you know, I acted like, yeah, of course, you know, that's old stuff, you know. Right? I was meanwhile thinking, where did he get it, you know? And it turned out he got it from the Hare Krishnas. So I knew already from that conversation that watch out for the Hare Krishnas. They're dangerous, you know. And I was avoiding them very expertly because they were easy to avoid because they had these wigs on, right? They tried to stop you with books and they had wigs on and you could recognize them at a mile distance, you know. There's a young guy with a funny wig, you know. It's a Hare. It's clearly a Hare Krishna. So, and then let's try to stop you with these books. So the best technique that I developed with a Hare Krishna was just have a straight, cold face. Very cold, very straight. As cold as you can, you know. Very, look down and cold. Look impersonal into space over his shoulder, right? And even if he waves the book in front of you, don't respond. It always works. It can discourage any Hare Krishna. Right? So, I successfully discouraged all the book distributors, right? There wasn't one that survived. I thought I'd share this with the book distributors because I might not be the only one doing this, you know? There might be a lot of people out there doing that trick, right? I'm sure I'm not the only one. It worked always, just that you know. So, some of these uninterested people may actually be interested. So there I was, then I ignoring them, etc. But yeah, then I met a girlfriend who had a dog named Krishna. Right. Then I also had a dog named Krishna. I was always calling this dog, Krishna, 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 come here. And anyway, Namabas and all that, and here we are. So, mercy comes also in everybody's life very clearly. Right? It's not just that. I mean, Christians are also getting realizations. Right? There are descriptions of Christians who pray. Right? Christian monks who live a life of purity, who are praying and who are getting all kinds of deep emotional devotional symptoms resembling bhava. Right, kind of. Clearly, something is there, and it's Krishna's reciprocating. There's no doubt about it. It's not just, you know, we can't write that off as some sort of self-induced hysteria. You know, no. There's reciprocation. There's no doubt about it. Krishna is not sectarian. However, in this seminar, we have. Shortly, everything was shortly, but we have shortly touched upon the difference between Krishna consciousness and other processes and pointed out that the mercy of Krishna consciousness in the form of the holy name is unconditional, whereas everywhere else there is a condition, right? It's like I'm sitting in this plane, you know, and suddenly the man next to me flashes this little paper next to me, you know, it's like a little booklet, and it's just a little cartoon drawing, and it shows a canyon, you know. I'm not going to draw it on the board, sorry. You have to just mentally picture it, you know. So a few lines, two angles, right? Like, there's a canyon right there. So it shows me the gap, you know, the gap. It says, there's a gap, you know, between this life and the next, he says into my ear while he shows me the gap. Right? It shows me the next picture, and suddenly there's a big cross that has appeared in the gap, you know, like the bridge, you know. And it's like, Jesus is the way, right? To bridge that gap, you know. And I'm going like, are you real, you know? Look at him like, it's kind of a surprise, right? He had a go at me. Anyway, he shouldn't have done that, right? That was a mistake. We gave it back to him. It is our pleasure, after all, to be merciful. Just like when Jayadvaitamacharya was still living in Alachua, one day this Jehovah Witness rang the doorbell and said, "Can I come in?" And Maharaj said, "Are you sure?" And he said, yeah, we're going. And then, you know, well, you know, with the usual karate debating technique, he just finished them off, right? And destroyed all their arguments, destroyed their faith totally. Just left them totally hanging there. And he said, but what? And he said, well, you asked for it, right? You wanted to come in. Wrong door. I'm nowhere near as good, but at least as enthusiastic. This guy also later shifted seat on the plane, which was pretty good because then I had two seats. Anyway, so I just tried to say that we have to be very, very practical in our mercy, in relating to mercy. And, of course, lust is one of our biggest problems, right? Material desire, right? Whew. Yeah. That's how to deal with that. If that wasn't there, then it would be easier. I mean, we can think that we have different problems with Krishna consciousness, right? We don't like this, we don't like that. We may not like some part of the philosophy. We may not like certain personalities. We may not like, being part of a movement. And I sympathize. Right? I sympathize with that part. I'm also an anarchist by tradition. Surrendering ISKCON was also like, or the attempt to surrender to authority. In ISKCON, it was also the first time for me. It's like I was also one from, let's break the barriers, let's go on the barricades, and let's just, you know, that's from the 60s. So it was difficult, and is difficult, but somehow or other, we are doing. So we may find so many things that we find difficult about this spiritual life, but we shouldn't fool ourselves. We shouldn't fool ourselves. We shouldn't like try and find an excuse to reject the mercy, and just because we don't want to surrender. We should know that our biggest problem is lust. That is just what we should know, right? And that's what it is, and that really, that's what we're dealing with, and that's what we have to conquer, lust. Right? And sooner or later, it all boils down to lust. Right? Really. And it may manifest in a gross way, it may manifest in a subtle way, right? In a subtle way where I and mine are important. And it is said the person who's more on the sensual platform, it's more mine. And the person who's more on the mental intellectual platform, it's more I, Prabhupada explains like that. But I and mine is still lust. And behind it is the same old problem, the eternal, all-devouring, sinful enemy. So we should understand that is our problem. We have to deal with that. And we have to conquer. So mercy will help us to conquer that lust. And no matter who we are, and no matter what our particular nature is, that's why we're here, because we are contaminated with lust, and there's no other reason. And that's the prime difficulty. Okay, I'll go with a few more things and then we're going to open it up for the questions. I had here the point that about compassion or passion, right? that we should be compassionate and not passionate, right? We kind of spoke about that earlier, that when we got a little bit into the determination of the Brahmana, the determination in the mode of goodness, and the determination of the Kshatriya, and that we really should function more in the mode of goodness. So we should be merciful and preach and be compassionate, but not passionate. Right? We should maintain our own balance and preach from a genuine platform of being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Sapta pare panischanisnatam. One should always bathe in the transcendental sound vibration, in hearing and chanting. We should just increase our hearing and chanting, somehow or other. If we can't chant, then we should hear. And at least that much, right? And then hopefully, and anyway, if we can't chant, still we should just do it. It's like, there's just no other way, really. Whether we like it or not, there really is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. That's it, the chanting. Right. Has to be done. So that point I wanted to make. Then I have a point which I call, since we're talking about bridges, and there was the Christian bridge, I wanted to talk about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's bridge, which is that it is very interesting, because up to the point of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, well, it started a little with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but not fully. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a householder, and he was just Krishna conscious as a householder. But otherwise, sadhus were living in the most renounced conditions of life. Right? They were living in very simple bhajan kutirs, or in caves, or under trees, and just, you know, as sadhus do, right? And and they were having very simple cloth and food and practically nothing, right? And then we see how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started to totally revolutionize things and drive around in his fancy car, in his overcoat, and he was heavily criticized, right? One day he came in his car with his overcoat, arrived in Vrindavan, and some Babaji said, like, very loud, so that, not to him, but to each other, so that he could also hear. They said, look, here is a follower of Rupa Goswami, right? He is a real follower of Rupa Goswami. And he said it loud enough for him to hear. And he said, yes, a follower of Rupa Goswami who is trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world instead of those who are just trying to imitate him and walk around in loincloth, right, without, you know, taking up the same mission. Bang, right, like he was the original black belt karate preacher and in our movement, and really started that that tradition which is now being carried forward by. So the concept of Yukta Vairagya. Now, if we look at it like a bridge, that he made a bridge between tradition and modern times. So Bhaktisiddhanta was ready to walk around in the dress of modern times and using modern amenities and all that, right? But we have to understand that he himself had his roots in the tradition. Whereas we, you know, like, we are from modern times, using the means of modern times for preaching. So it's therefore, our situation is slightly different. And sometimes it might be valuable for us to wander back a little bit over the bridge, right, and to look more at the tradition, and to absorb a little more tradition. Right. That will strengthen us, because the tradition is very, very much based on the Veda, which is a spiritual culture, and that that we need, right, a little more culture, right? So it would help our spiritual life a lot if we could add a little more traditional culture, not to not by artificially trying to impose all kinds of standards, you know, like we cannot use the bathrooms in the house anymore, we have to go now into the forest, right? Because it's not Vedic to have bathrooms in a house. This is terrible, right? That would not be practical. You don't want to, even in India, sometimes you wonder if you see all that going on. But whatever may be, to look back at the tradition is an important point, and therefore spending some time in India to absorb some culture is very, very helpful. The culture of India is very, very valuable, and Prabhupada pointed that out. He made statements that that at least one will have to take one birth in India, he said one time, before going back to God, at one birth in India. Not always, of course, but, you know, recommending that every devotee would spend time in India. The festivals was also part of that, part of not just India, but especially the holy dhams, because the holy dhams goes further than India. Without the mercy of the holy dham, it says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one cannot, no, it's Bhaktisiddhanta, I think. Is it? Yes, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says. He said, without the mercy of the holy dham, one cannot actually understand nam. One cannot get the full realization of nam. Right? He said, because dham is the natural residence of nam. Right? And when the nam comes to this world, it is actually residing in the dham. Of course, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go to Vrindavan. It is said that Sarup Damodar Goswami, amongst many others, never went to Vrindavan in a whole lifetime. Right? So even some of the most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't go to Vrindavan. But, of course, internally one must be there in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. One must have that spirit and understand the importance of Vrindavan. And one must desire to be in Vrindavan. One must at least mentally be there, right? Even if one is not physically there, right? Even by physically going there, one may not penetrate into the real Vrindavan, right? One may just see plastic bags lying in the street, hear rickshaws and all that, and all that. You know, it may be a little difficult to see Krishna, but actually Krishna is there. And personally, I feel that it's not at all difficult to sense the presence of Krishna in Vrindavan. In fact, it is as if he was just here. Wherever you go, you just feel Krishna was just here. He just left. Where did he go? He's just a minute ago. He was here. The fragrance, everything is still there. It is like that, very transcendental. So that must be there. So Prabhupada wanted us to go every year to these festivals, not from like, oh well, I don't like the festival because it's so noisy. I agree with you, it's very noisy. I also don't like certain things. I must admit, I also don't always like kirtans with 2,000 people with mosquito repellent on, you know, jumping around in Mayapur. Half of them from Russia, very wild, you know, mowing their arms around, and I stand in the middle. Then sometimes I also feel like, well, there's so many here, they won't really notice if I'm zoof out the door. Right? So I appreciate that. One may sometimes look for a more quiet corner. That's okay. So we don't always have to go with the hordes and the herds, but we must keep that connection with Vrindavan very strong. And when I meet devotees who tell me, wow, I haven't been to the Dham for 20 years, then I'm thinking like, whoa, this is not at all healthy. This is not good. Not good. It is not, no exaggeration that the Dham is so powerful. That's so powerful. In the Dham, Krishna consciousness is a way of life. Here, Krishna consciousness is oftentimes a set of rules. Right? It's a set of rules, and we're living in a movement with a set of rules and a whole structure, etc. It's a movement and, you know, a society with a set of rules. But in Vrindavan, it's beyond that. It's in the street. It's everywhere. The rickshawala can turn around and, make profound Krishna conscious statements. You know, the sabjiwala, who supplies sabjis to the temple, has fabulous shaligram shilas. You'd be surprised if you go to his house what an altar he has, you know, and what worship, what puja. Right? I used to have deep discussions with the barber, right, who had also shaved Prabhupada. And, a barber is a low caste, right? But, in Vrindavan, nobody cares about the externals, right? They don't care. They don't care if you're a sannyasi. They just care about everyone is a devotee. That's the mood. Anyway, and the worship of the deity is so in the center, the festivals and all that. So the connection with the Dham is also very essential and very practical, right? And we should not underestimate the need for taking shelter. Back to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta for a sec. I have two things on that. Merciful machines, you know. That's brilliant. Prabhupada started with machines. Put the Maha Mantra on a not a CD, how you call those things in those days? Record thing. Huh? all the scratches, you know, like, yeah, I'm also getting up there. Anyway, so it was all on the records, etc. And that was far out. That was revolutionary. There's still people who criticize Prabhupada for giving Gayatri by tape. They say it doesn't count. It doesn't count. No, it cannot do. Yes, can. And this is wonderful. We're still getting the transcendental sound vibration of Prabhupada's voice, of his pictures today. So let us just fill our house with all that, our residence with that. Let's get it all. Let us be net collectors. Now, look at Satchinanda Maharaj, who is like really known as a nectar hunter, right? And he is into nectar, right? He's Nectar Swami, everyone knows that. Yes, and he always has some little nectar, because he always looks for a little nectar. Yeah? And then he will tell you also that, now I am going to give you, please pay attention, because I am now going to, tell you something very valuable, yes? So I want you to really, for one moment, right, pay full attention. Yes? yes. I can go on, you know. I can do what. It's very nice. Yeah? Do an imitation, right, of all the different personalities. I can do one, but not this year, the other time. A little more in shape. Anyway, so, yes, going for the nectar, right? Like everywhere. That's important. Collect it, you know. Don't sit still, you know. Go get it, right? So it's like Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the mines of the revealed scriptures, right? Do you realize what that means, right? Have you ever been in a mine? Helmet on, light, deep down, you know, hot, you know. Hammering away or whatever it is, trying to get your things out. It's hard labor, right? Then you bring your treasures back. All right, so that we have to do all these things. So collect it. We can't just wait. Is it gonna come? You know, I'm not getting any mercy. That's not the proper attitude. The proper attitude is go out and get it. Go get it. You know, you have to be go getters, right? Like I saw a school class in New York with their teachers coming out of the subway, and the teacher was just giving the kids the perfect training. I was very impressed with the educational system in New York. All the kids were walking out of the subway, and the teachers just said, go, 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 go. And I was like, perfect. These kids are really being prepared for society, you know, like, go, go. So I would also like to say, go, 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 go get it, right? Let's go. Can't wait, you know, for it to come. We have to go get it ourselves. It's all there, right? That's it. That's how it is. We have to search it out, hunt it out, and be eager. That is the practical application. But maintaining the mode of goodness, right? This is important. Sometimes for service, we have to temporarily transcend the mode of goodness, right? And suddenly our whole nice schedule goes upside down, it's marathon again, and everything is like, all the regulation out of the window, all the peace finished, you know. And that also happens, but it's okay. But whenever normal times recur, again, the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is the mode of thoughtfulness, the mode of honesty, the mode of staying close to Krishna, the mode of cultivation, right? The mode of cultivating Krishna consciousness, the mode of surrounding ourselves with very favorable impressions. Don't let don't leave your walls empty. Like, put pictures of Krishna in there. Like, I have a story about this one man, Mr. Gupta, in Indore. Mr. Gupta in Indore, he is a devotee, but he has a company in truck parts. He sells truck parts, and he sits there surrounded by truck parts. But in between every little empty spot there is a picture of Krishna. Wherever you look, there's a picture of Krishna. Everything he has a picture of Krishna. There's pictures of Krishna on the ceiling. There's pictures of Krishna all over the walls, everywhere. On his desk, little pictures of Krishna. On the door, pictures of Krishna. His pen has a picture of Krishna. He has a ring with a picture of Krishna. His clothes have pictures of Krishna. Everything. Mr. Gupta is just everywhere are pictures of Krishna. So one day I asked Mr. Gupta, why are you having so many pictures of Krishna? He said, like, well, you know, just in case I forget. Now that's the spirit, see? Just for that spirit, right? Of that special endeavor not to forget, Krishna's purchased. Right? There's no doubt. For that he'll get Krishna's mercy. Right. So Krishna's mercy, everyone gets Krishna's mercy in this movement because it's a mercy movement, right? No matter what, you know, no matter, we get it. But if you want special mercy, right, then you have to show some special eagerness, right? You have to make a special endeavor, then you'll get it. And that's the main thing. There's always a reason to lament your fate, you know. I mean, I can lament like anything. I have many reasons why I could lament, right? Poor me, poor me. And I'm sure everyone, if you go through the poor me exercise, we could go around the room, pass the mic around, and everyone could easily fill 10 minutes, right, with reasons why everyone should have pity on us. Poor me, you know. I have it especially difficult. Why? My mind, or my body, or, you know, whatever it may be, my karma, my this, my that. I'm a special disadvantage. Me, yeah. Lament, lament, lament. So, no. So practical application means daivi sampat. Collect daivi sampat, or spiritual wealth. Collect it. Collect it everywhere. Surround ourselves with mercy, with direct association of Krishna in whatever form we can get it, right? So that, like, everything becomes very favorable. Yeah, sometimes when I have no time to read, then I decide to listen to a tape at night, you know. At least, then I turn on the tape at night and I hope at least I wake up a few times and hear a few lines or hear it while I sleep. Something you got to hear, you know. I mean, you got to hear as much as possible. Right? So by hook or by crook, hear, you know. Yeah, by hook or by crook, hearing, right? You know, like now you can get things on CDs, right? MP3, 60 lectures on one CD. I mean, 60 lectures, that's a lot of lectures, you know, to keep you going for a long time. Get a few. You can buy them right here. I'm not advertising, but it just makes sense to just spend your money there and get these and listen to. Get an MP3 disc player or something, you know, and listen to these things. It's listen to Prabhupada, right? And others also, but listen to these lectures again and again. That's where you get strength, right? It's like you have to work for it to get the strength. You know, you don't just. And from all these things comes spiritual strength. Like sometimes I get into the habit for a while and then I stop it again. But to chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. And if you do it every day, it starts to get momentum. After some, it just gets momentum. It takes over your consciousness. It begins to, after some time, emerge. You know, you're just walking around and suddenly fragments of the chapter just go right through the fog of the brain. Zoom, and Bhagavad Gita sloka floats by. Right? Just from reciting. And after a while, you know the whole chapter. Huh? Like that, right? There, all these things I mentioned earlier on this week, that learning verses is a way to take shelter, not just a way to, you know, get ammunition for preaching and just go, you know, te unusmin yatade, hey, komaram yoginam jara. Not just like that, but also it gives us shelter at times when we need it. And you see how much Prabhupada's mind was absorbed in these things, in the verses and in the examples of the scriptures. You see so many, Prabhupada's just using so many examples from the scriptures because he spent a lot of time with the scriptures. Okay, so I cannot take it so much further. Because this seminar is a time of recharging the batteries, in a sense, I've put the focus there. But finally, after all the exercises and all the different approaches and meditations and ideas, the idea is that all that translates into being merciful. Remember the cup that I described, that we have a little cup when we join, that we get, when we get this little cup when we join, and this is the cup we use for taking mercy, and we take a few drops with it, and that's all we get. And that's when we need it like anything, always hungry, because it's never enough to satisfy our desire. It's such a small cup, but anyway, a few drops just to keep us going, and we feel empty and not satisfied, but we keep on drinking more and more. And gradually, little by little, only we do service, and by the service, slowly the cup grows a little bit. But the day that we start using the cup for handing out the mercy, the cup starts growing significantly. So therefore, we have this obligation, somehow or other, that after we have truly become surcharged with transcendence, to turn around and pass on the mercy in some way or other. And we also touched upon that earlier on. There are different ways it can be done. But the Spirit must always be there to pass on the mercy. And then we can be strong preachers who will have a deeper motivation to preach, a genuine deep desire from within, from a conviction. That's the mode of goodness, not the mode of passion where, you know, we have to, yes, are you fired up? Like in the morning, you know, you stand in the morning in the corner turning around and you're flapping your head. I can't do it now, but your head is going like that, you know, your cheeks are flapping, you stand with a foot on the ground. And then, you know, like, at the end of the night, you come home like, oh God, was it heavy out there? Next day again. We need a little deeper conviction. So that's the purpose of what I was trying to do this week. It's the thought that counts. I'm not so satisfied with what I was able to do. It was a lot less than what I had prepared for. But I hope something was still okay. So if there are any responses, then please let me know. Henry. Yeah.
Maharaj, it's about the chanting.
Yeah.
And it is told us that we should chant, that we could hear it.
Yeah.
But how about if you chant internal, without...
That is not so merciful. Because not only you will hear it, but so many other living entities will hear it. So Lord Chaitanya wanted us to chant loudly. In the Aryabhakti Vilas, which is... There are different types of chanting of mantras mentioned. So one of them is mental chanting, chanting within the mind in a meditative way. And it counts. It is bona fide chanting. It works if you chant in the mind. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended loud chanting. And this loud chanting especially is merciful chanting. All the germs in the room are getting also purified by that chanting. The trees and the plants, etc. So by being merciful, you're attracting also more mercy. Because, you see, if we had to be sadhana siddhas, if our perfection in spiritual life was depending on our good performance of spiritual practices, it's called sadhana, then we would have no chance. No chance. We wouldn't make it. Yeah, because we are so weak in this age. Right? So we very much depend on mercy. So by giving out a little mercy, we're attracting mercy. So it is the best to chant loud. And also by hearing, it is an extra means of concentration, right? And we're already so weak, right? It's already so difficult to concentrate. So we should make it more difficult by going for the most difficult type, the manasa japa, the mental japa. And if you think, no, but for me it's easier. No, it is not, right? Even if you think it is easier, it is actually not. One should take the guidance of the instructor, you know, like in any regards, you know. It's like I may be driving and I may say, like, it's easier for me to shift gears like that, you know. Instructor says, no, do it with that hand. You know, but I'm left-handed, you know, like, I mean, I have to do it with the left hand, you know, like, it's easier for me. No, keep your left hand on the wheel and just do it with this one. But it's difficult, it's like, so for... Due to our own conditioning, one thing may be easier or another, but we shouldn't follow the system of the conditioning. We should just follow the system of the instructor and chant loudly. Any other responses? Yes, could you pass the mic?
I would like to ask that you said if you try to go away, then Krishna, we see in so many way Krishna. But what sometimes I feel that I'm here in the movement, but still I cannot remember. And how to change this?
Yeah. Yes, we all have that. You know, I don't think anyone is here and is fully remembering and appreciating where we are and how wonderful it is. Otherwise, every moment we would just be overwhelmed with the greatest ecstasy, and that's not the case. So, when we are realizing that, you know, that we're falling short, that there's a gap between where we are and reality, actually the real, we can intellectually understand, this is all the mercy of Krishna, and Krishna is here, it's wonderful, this Radhadesh is like, has been transformed into a dham, it's all spiritual, as soon as you come through the gate, you come into the spiritual world, it is the spiritual world, but, you know, for those who live here, you know, they can tell you the inside story, and it doesn't always sound like the spiritual world, you know, wow. Right? And it's not particularly about Radhadesh, that's about any place. I mean, you know, Radhadesh, of course, is especially nice and much nicer than many other places, you know. I wasn't speaking, but I used it as an example. So, if we feel there is some lacking in us like that, right, then we should look for purification, right? And that's it. We are always realizing again and again, oh, I need some purification. So where do I find that? So then we take the opportunity for any little bit of purification we can get. Let's go for it, you know. So that becomes then our focus, purification. And just for that endeavor, right, Krishna will give us some reciprocation and it becomes induced. Yeah. Okay, he wants the mic.
Maharaj, the impure thoughts that are coming in our minds are being purified by reaction or suffering. So, I cannot really understand.
Yeah.
Is it not like that?
Partially.
So
it's not the only way.
Could you give an example of how it works?
Impure thoughts or impure desires can be purified through suffering, right? But it can also just be by a delicious piece of burfi, right? Or, you know, or by a beautiful darshan of Sisi Radha Gopinath, or by dancing ecstatically in the kirtan, or by...
More direct. This is more
than whatever it is, you know, there are so many ways that it can be done. Yes, but some suffering is there, and anyway, I didn't let you finish your sentence, so now I should be quiet and please finish your sentence.
So the impure thoughts that come up, I wrote down what you were saying about it, is that we get. We don't want to take it as we should not complain that we're suffering because there are so many impure thoughts in our minds. So how does it?
Well, what I meant to say is we cannot just say that, oh, you know, why does it all have to be so heavy? Why is Krishna giving me so many difficulties when I'm really trying to be a pure devotee? I'm doing my best. I'm trying to be a devotee. I was really serious. I was chanting my rounds and I was every day coming to Mongol Arctic. And now he's given me this horrible disease. And now for 3 months, I haven't been able to go to Mongol Arctic and my whole spiritual life is spoiled by it. And why is Krishna doing this? You know, I mean, yeah? Why is he sabotaging my spiritual life? Right? Is he mean or something? Or, you know, doesn't he want me to be a devotee or what? You know, we shouldn't think like that. We should recognize that, you know, it's very easy to recognize. That's why I mentioned to us. We can see that there's so much impurity in us, so much. I mean, thousands of times a day, we're thinking all kinds of impure things. So we shouldn't be surprised if we're still getting a token reaction. We can see we're full of impurity. So therefore, no cause for lamentation. We can really see. We should, when the suffering comes, right, we should remember, yes, well, it's understandable, you know, just seeing what's even the sinful activities I've committed in this life, if I would add them up, that would warrant all these reactions, what to speak of previous lives. In other words, you know, we cannot just allow our mind to start lamenting, etc. Yeah, that's the point. We have to. I'm sorry, Prabhu, but Pladnana Maharaj has come, so I think, and I'm way over time. So we can discuss outside the class. So I thank you very much for coming and partaking. I hope to do better next time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.